Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining the Socialist Insight once again. Today we have our special guest from last week, Darcy Richardson. He joined the program, and as I mentioned last week, he's a historian. He was a candidate, U.S. presidential candidate for 2012. And Darcy, thanks for joining the program again today.
Well, thank you for having me, Stuart.
Darcy, what I'd like for you to do is take probably like around a minute or so and just share a little bit about yourself and what you have actually done as far as a politician. And also a little bit about your background. Could you do that for us, please? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Stuart. Stuart mentioned my name is Darcy Richardson. I'm a historian and author from Jacksonville, Florida. I've written a number of books, half dozen books at this point, including a five-volume history on independent and third-party politics in the United States, dating back to the country's founding. And I have two more volumes planned, which will go through the 2012 presidential election with the final volume. Also wrote a book on the 1968 presidential campaign called A Nation Divided. And I'm working on a short Kindle book, which we'll publish in about 10 days, and it's going to be called Mitt Romney and the White Horse Prophecy. It's kind of the Mormon pursuit of the presidency. It's a very short book that will be available on Kindle, as I mentioned, in about 10 days. That's about it at this point, Stuart.
Well, I appreciate it. Of course, you can go on and share a lot more about yourself because when you consider your experiences, they're quite expansive. Darcy, in the last program, we were talking about more of the domestic issues here in the U.S. Today, we're going to focus a little bit more on the economies around the world, and also we still want to include the impact that the U.S. economy have on other governments and vice versa. But as we have mentioned from the last program that we had, Darcy, which you and I both agree, the U.S. is in an economic depression. Looking at the economies of the world, do you think that we're headed for a global depression?
Yeah, I really do. I think parts of the world, large parts of the world, are already experiencing the global depression, and that would include all of Europe, pretty much all of Europe, where we have countries, Greece, Portugal, Spain, and now even Italy, that are really teetering on almost economic collapse. And the European Central Bank, led by Mario Draghi, and the International Monetary Fund, under the leadership of Christine Lagarde, are just trying everything they can to solve the European debt crisis and prevent this from becoming much worse than what it is now. Then we see a market slowdown in Asia. I really think we're heading toward a global economic disaster here,
Global disaster.
Right.
And, Darcy, we see just last week that Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, he announced that he was going to take certain measures to help boost the U.S. economy and also to boost jobs. And what the Fed's, their plans are would be to, where the Feds would soak up $40 billion worth of mortgages and help to boost the job market, real estate market, and also boost consumer spending. Darcy, this move by the Feds, do you think it's too little too late, or do you see it as being a significant measure to help strengthen this economy?
Well, there's little question that Bernanke is gravely concerned about the state of the U.S. and world economy. I don't think his plan is going to work. And that's partly because his monetary stimulus, the latest of purchasing a collateralized mortgage securities at about $40 billion per month, All that's really doing is is a desperate attempt to save the failed banks, you know, the zombie banks, you know, bankrupt institutions like Bank of America. They're nothing but zombies that have been absorbing government and Federal Reserve resources for the past, you know, almost 5 years. They're not providing credit. They're not investing in any plant and equipment here in the U.S., and they're not investing in human resources. In other words, they're not hiring people. So I just look at this as kind of a desperate measure on Bernanke's part. I don't think it's going to solve the deepening economic crisis that we're in. It does nothing to really reduce, you know, our high level of unemployment, which I mentioned last week is really at least 23 million, maybe as many as 30 to 35 million when you include, you know, people that are underemployed.
Underemployed.
Mm-hmm. Making only a fraction of what they made, let's say, in 2007. So it's a Band-Aid, but the only institutions that's helping are the same financial institutions that got us into this mess. So, in fact, the mortgages that he's talking about purchasing, a lot of those are derivatives. I mean, they're derivatives themselves, and the world, you know, right now we probably have like $1.25 quadrillion in derivatives, you know, credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, other exotic financial tools, and that's the whole problem. These are all speculative tools, and they're doing nothing for our physical economy.
So basically, with this money that Ben Bernanke is putting out there, in your opinion, in my opinion also, it is creating further danger for the U.S. economy.
Yes, absolutely. It's what it's doing. It's artificially, but at the same time, it's artificially propping up the world's financial market. In other words, making sure that those that have continue to have, while the rest of the world suffers. And the whole reason we're in this economic mess to begin with is that the wealthy, and not just here in the United States, but globally, have ransacked, looted, exploited the entire, you know, world's economy, leaving crumbs for everybody else. And until that's addressed, we're never gonna get out of this.
Well, when you look at that whole scenario that you just mentioned, back in 2007, 2008, we had President Bush was saying that the world was ready to come to an end, the U.S., the world for the U.S., and he needed $700 billion, and then right afterwards we had the stimulus that came in from Obama once he came into office, and Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats, and also the Republicans supported it. There was an additional over $800 billion that was there available. It didn't create jobs then. Do you see basically the same thing as this being just another bailout?
Yeah, that's really what this amounts to. Bernanke and the Federal Reserve are taking really almost worthless derivatives off the books of the leading financial institutions in the country. It's really not going to do anything to pump credit into the real economy in the United States, into, you know, small business and state and local governments that need the money to do anything. I just don't see it as working. It's going to delay further probably the total collapse. But in the end, it's just another bailout for the zombie banks.
I see. Also, you know, I just want to get a little bit more about what we see with the job market. And I just, one of the things I wanted to touch on was just looking at capitalism. And people, a lot of times, you know that I'm a socialist, and of course I've supported socialism for years. People always talk about how socialism, referred to it as being a failure. Well, if that's a failure, socialism, what we see, the models for capitalism right now, capitalism, and what we have seen over the last, you know, last 10 years or so, and even going back further, where we see this from one decade to another, we're repeating the same mistakes. and the same pitfalls. Is capitalism, is it working for working people, in your opinion?
No, no, and it hasn't for decades and decades, probably going back to the 60s or 70s. And
I would say going back to the 30s and 40s, but anyway,
right.
Please.
Mm-hmm. The large bankers in this country and the folks on Wall Street, they're not opposed to socialism. They love to socialize the risks, but you know, and privatize the profits when they make them. They're some of the most socialist people in the world. I mean, they don't mind all the sharing in the losses that they're responsible for. But of course, when it comes to the profits, that's just for them.
Darcy, again, I want to get back to those economies there in Europe. As you just mentioned, those economies, they're also facing an economic crisis. What role, the U.S. is playing a role in trying to help recover those economies, an economic recovery there, but in your opinion, what role should the U.S. play to help over a global economic meltdown? Because if this economy falls, the economies of the world are going to fall. But what role should the U.S. be playing at this point?
Well, I think, you know, getting back to something I mentioned toward the end of last week's show, is what we should do here in the United States is let's nationalize the Federal Reserve, the whole banking cartel. And we have to keep in mind that with what's going on in Europe, the Federal Reserve has already been involved in a huge secret bailout of foreign banks. You know,
trillions of dollars.
Trillions. At least a quarter of the $29.6 trillion that was pumped into the financial markets since between 2007 and 2011 went to European banks. So we already have a huge stake in this, or I should say the City of London and Wall Street have a huge stake in this. But ultimately it's the taxpayer at the, you know, who will, you know, foot the bill if these economies go under. So we already have a huge involvement in it. We're already our economy is going to suffer the same fate as the European economies if countries start defaulting. So
nationalize the banks. That's the first step.
Right.
And then
right, exactly.
That's a big step there.
That's huge, yes.
Right, that's huge.
We have to look
now. Do you think the nation and the people within this nation, do you think they're ready for drastic measures like that? Because I believe what we're looking at in the future is going to require drastic measures. But do you think people are ready for that? Or do they need to wait for the fall before they say, okay, now we're ready for change? Do you think people are ready?
I think people are going to have to see something cataclysmic happen. If they see countries start toppling in Europe, you know, Greece, Portugal, Italy, Spain, you know, and the banks going down with them, I think people will be more open to the idea of nationalizing, you know, the two big to fail entities that really are responsible for this entire economic crisis to begin with. And we have to look at the reality. Credit has been very hard to come by in the U.S. Since the financial meltdown of September 2008. Banks aren't loaning to small businesses. They're not loaning to consumers like they did prior to the meltdown. So to make the money available, we're going to have to put those under taxpayer control, so that we can get credit lent to entities that are going to start spending money and boosting our real economy, our physical economy.
Darcy, as you just mentioned, the economies of Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain, they're facing economic troubles, and those governments are imposing harsh austerity measures on their citizens. Do you see the possibility of this happening here in the U.S., or how close is the U.S. to a similar debt crisis like those nations?
We have a little more time, not a tremendous amount of more time, but we do have a little more time. I think it would be hastened if, you know, we see a Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, presidency. They're going to impose austerity regardless of the shape of our economy. I mean, that's, if you look at, Paul Ryan's original, budget proposals, which included a lot of sharp cuts or deep cuts to some of our entitlement
programs.
Yeah,
cuts across the board.
Austerity is coming to the United States. It's a matter of, does it come immediately with Romney and Paul, or does it come a little later with, President Obama? Or does it not come at all with Stuart Alexander?
I like that.
But austerity is coming here, just like it's now engulfing Europe. And I don't know if you noticed, saw the news earlier today, but in Greece, judges and doctors, including emergency room physicians, they've decided they're only going to hear emergency cases in the courtroom. This is part of because of the austerity measures being imposed on them, and the deep cuts are taking to their salaries. Doctors are only going to perform emergency surgeries, elective surgeries, or things that aren't considered life-threatening. They're going to delay, and that's at least for the next 2 weeks. So these are real life things that are affecting the people, of Europe. In Greece, Greece is a basket case. Unemployment among folks under the age of 30 is over 50%. One half. It's unbelievable. They're suffering something even deeper than than what they went through in the Great Depression. Great Depression. So, and they're not the only country. Portugal, Spain, Italy is starting to feel some of the effects of this deepening recession. So, there's no escaping it for us. It's going to come. It's just a matter of does it come sooner
just a matter of time.
Right.
Sooner or later. Darcy, as I mentioned, I'd like to take a break so you can reintroduce yourself. If you can take maybe a minute or so and just tell our guests a little bit about yourself. I might mention that Darcy just Richardson was just recently running as a presidential candidate in the 2012 campaign, and also he's a friend of mine for several years. But Darcy, could you just reintroduce yourself to our listeners? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Stuart. My name is Darcy Richardson. I'm a native of Jacksonville, Florida, originally from Philadelphia suburbs. And before that, I grew up in a military family, so I kind of lived all over the world, including about 6 years in West Germany. But I'm pretty much a political historian and author, but I have been for more than three decades involved in independent and third-party politics in the U.S. I have run for office several times on minor party tickets, including the now defunct Consumer Party in Philadelphia. And with that party, I had run for both State Auditor General and the U.S. Senate back in the 80s. And most recently, my last stab at elective office was a quixotic protest candidacy against President Obama in about a half a dozen Democratic primaries earlier this year. And,
Darcy, when you ran for lieutenant governor, in Florida, how many votes did you get?
We only got about 7,500. I ran with Dr. Fareed Ghavari. He's an Iranian-born economist and also author of about nine books. We ran on a platform calling for a state-owned bank in Florida, and we were able to publicize that. We modeled it after the State Bank of North Dakota, which was founded by the socialist-oriented nonpartisan league back in the late 19-teens. Yeah, 1918, 1919. And it's still a very viable bank, a very profitable bank, owned by the citizens of North Dakota.
Oh, okay. Darcy, I'm going to move back into some additional questions we have for our program today. Darcy, what is your opinion regarding NAFTA, that's the North American Free Trade Agreement, and in your opinion, has NAFTA benefited the economies of both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border?
I'm a good question. I'm a longtime opponent of the North American Free Trade Agreement. I actually opposed it from the outset when Ross Perot was one of the few people speaking speaking against it. Everyone will probably remember the debate, the famous debate he had with Vice President Al Gore over NAFTA. But I always thought that that great sucking sound would one day be very obvious to everyone, and I think it is. I don't think NAFTA or most of the or really any of the trade agreements that the U.S. has signed in the last 20 years have one, benefited U.S. workers, but two, I really question whether it's benefited workers in other countries as well. I think the only thing a lot of these agreements have benefited are the multinational corporations, which found it easier under these trade agreements to move plants and factories, you know, south of the border and exploit workers there. So, yeah, I'm pretty much opposed to all of the so-called free trade agreements. They've done nothing to benefit our workers.
Obviously, we know that Mexico is an agrarian society, and many of the farmers, they were having to just abandon their farms and their fields and go into the cities. And really what it has done, it has caused an economic crisis, job shortage, and also it has put many people that have been laborers in fields, developing crop in that country, it has actually put them out of work. So actually has created a severe job shortage there in Mexico as well. Darcy, the Socialist Party USA is demanding an immediate withdrawal of the United States from the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Central American Free Trade Agreements, CAFTA. And also we oppose the creation of widening the free trade areas of the Americas. What, in your opinion, Darcy, do you believe the U.S. should withdraw from any, some, or all of our current trade agreements?
At this point in our history, and based on the outcomes or the results of these earlier free trade agreements, yeah, I think we should withdraw from all of them, including the most recent, you know, South Korean free trade agreement, which, you know, didn't get a lot of publicity in 2010, but there were a number of people in the labor movement that did their, you know, worked really hard at defeating it, but weren't successful. All of these free trade agreements have caused nothing but harm to our working class.
You live right there in Florida, and of course that's only 90 miles away from Cuba. Do you think we should be doing business with Cuba? I mean, in my opinion, I think we should be. But considering it's our close neighbor, do you think that we should break down those barriers that we've had for well over since the 60s and be doing business with our neighbors to the south?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Cuba is our neighbor. We should be doing trade. We should be engaged in all kinds of arts and culture with Cuba. There should be free travel back and forth between the two countries. Definitely. I'm for breaking down all of those barriers against our neighbor to the south. And you might recall, Stuart, back in 2006, I had managed Brian Moore's campaign for the U.S. Senate.
Right, I was there.
When he ran for the U.S.
I was a candidate with the campaign.
Right.
I see. I'm
2006.
Speaking.
Yeah, a couple years.
2006. I'm thinking about 2007, 2008. My apologies.
Right. But we actually sent Brian to Cuba on the day of the first televised debate here between Catherine Harris and Bill Nelson. Since they didn't invite Brian, we sent him to Cuba, and you know, he met with a number of government officials there and a number of people, in the Catholic Church, and just spent 3 days there, and we were just doing that to demonstrate that, you know, what we should be doing, you know, with our neighbors there, and we should have, you know, open exchange and free trade of goods and commodities, but also ideas, and so I just thought I'd mention that.
Right. Darcy, we're going to move overseas just for a few minutes and talking about some of the more current events that are taking place there in the Middle East and in Libya and Syria and throughout that part of the world. The U.S. government initially went into Libya to enforce a U.N. no-fly zone. Now the U.S. embassy has been attacked, and our U.S. ambassador, Chris Stevens, he was brutally assaulted and murdered. Darcy, should the U.S. have been taking a leading role in the transition of the Libyan government, or did the U.S. have any obligation beyond enforcing the U.N. resolution, or should the U.S. government had any role at all? What is your opinion on that?
Well, I don't think that the U.S. should have been the ones responsible for enforcing the U.N. no-fly zone. That should have been the responsibility of the United Nations. But, you know, as far as Libya and our involvement there, I mean, this was, you know, one of President Obama's proxy wars. So, of course, the U.S. is going to, you know, be involved there, you know, as the new fragile government, you know, takes shape. But, you know, make no mistake about it, that was a war.
It was Obama's proxy war.
Right.
Okay.
So our hands are dirty there. I mean,
right.
We can't say that we didn't have any responsibility for what's transpired there, when we certainly did. You know,
you think the planning was already there, and I agree with you. That was already there before it actually transpired.
Are you talking about the overthrow of Gaddafi?
You say proxy war. In other words, were we already looking forward to participating before it happened?
We were fermenting that. Yes, definitely. Definitely. I don't think there's any question.
Now, this in regards to what has taken place recently, and of course, it's all over the news, and of course, I regret seeing what happened to the ambassador there, as millions of other people. But at this point, what should our involvement be there? I mean, should we draw back from our position there in Libya and take a lesser role in that country? Or where should the people of that country, where should they be going to develop their own government? Because right now, as you mentioned, it was a proxy war, and basically they're trying to use that as a puppet government for U.S. interests. But where should we be going at this point? Because now we are there.
We are there, but I really think that we should begin to draw back. You know, just like you know, move aside, let the new Libyan government rely on whatever, you know, sources they have to throughout the world to build their, you know, new but fragile government. And, you know, the U.S. could give advice, we're not the greatest democracy to actually show other countries how they should, you know, run theirs. But you know, individual Americans, I think, could extend advice and counsel to the Libyans, as can, you know, a number of the European countries and different countries, you know, throughout the world. But it's not our sole responsibility, and shouldn't be, and, you know, to shape whatever government is going to, you know, emerge from this.
Darcy, when you look at the American public, years ago we had isolationism and interventionist the way the people viewed our government, our position should have been in the world. But it really seems that most Americans, and I'm not talking about Washington, D.C., but people are really looking at the U.S. taking a lesser role in what has taken place in the Middle East and in that part of the world. Why isn't Washington listening?
Well, we have so many international commitments at this point, and so many financial interests, you know, throughout the world, whether it's oil in the Middle East or what have you, that you know, the Washington is really tone deaf to what, you know, the American people feel and believe. Whether, you know, whether it's someone on the left who wants to see the U.S. Curtail its involvement in foreign countries, or it's, you know, some people on the right, you know, some of Ron Paul's folks who want
right.
to end the, you know, U.S. commitments. Washington is absolutely tone deaf to that.
Right. And what I see is Washington, they're not listening because they're going to listen to the people that actually fund their campaigns.
Right.
They're going to listen to the lobbyists, the people that have sent them there in the first place to not protect
mm-hmm.
American interests, but to protect U.S. corporate interests. That's what they're
mm-hmm.
really there for.
And exactly.
also, you know, we see just recently with the election there in Egypt, we have a new government there as well. This new government with elected President Mohamed Morsi, is the U.S. reaching out or to this government, or is the U.S. What is our position with that country? Because it seems like we're creating, there's a wall in the relationship between us and Egypt, the people, that they're not accepting an open hand to invite us in as friends, is even on the verge of being hostile. What did you see?
Just, you know, from various, you know, reports that I've read, I think both sides are being very cautious in their relationship with the other. I think a lot of people were surprised that the, you know, Muslim Brotherhood was so aggressive in seeking, you know, to consolidate its power in Egypt. I think that took a lot of particularly conservative American politicians by surprise, that they would be as aggressive as they were when the military in Egypt, you know, called for free elections. And so I think that's given, you know, everyone, you know, Republicans, but also, you know, President Obama, has given everyone a little bit of a pause. So they're being very deliberate and very cautious in how they, and, you know, with what kind of relationship they develop with, you know, the new Egyptian government.
Well, just recently, President Obama said, in his words, "I don't think we should consider them being Egypt an ally, the new government, rather, an ally,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but we don't consider them an enemy."
Right. See, so. that's exactly that's his cautionary. He's trying to take a very cautionary approach here. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it, you know, plays out. Now, it's very unfortunate with the, you know, the U.S. embassy there this week or this past
right.
week, where there was, you know, a large, you know, uprising against our embassy. But, you know, there's going to be probably a lot of that in the Middle East in the days and weeks to come. You know, and there I was referring to the 14-minute film or trailer.
Right, exactly. Darcy, we're halfway through our program. I'd like for you to take today we have Darcy Richardson. He was with us last week. He was a presidential candidate in the 2012 election. He's a historian, journalist, and I've known Darcy for several years. Darcy, could you just reintroduce yourself to our guests, and then we're going to go on with the program? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Stuart. As Stuart mentioned, I recently challenged President Obama in the Democratic primaries, well, at least in a half dozen states. I had run on a platform calling for a national banking or credit system, which could be accomplished through nationalizing the Federal Reserve. I also hearkened back to FDR's administration, thought we should have a new Works Progress administration centered around the North American Water and Power Alliance. I also called for, and this is something, Stuart, that I would like to actually get your take on it, a capital levy on wealth. I called for that in the campaign. It got a little attention, but not as much as I had hoped. And obviously, you know, I campaigned to end the war in Afghanistan, as well as our proxy wars. And I had also called for a indefinite moratorium on home and farm foreclosures. So that was kind of my campaign in a nutshell. As I mentioned earlier, I've also written a number of political history books.
And as you know, myself being a socialist, we don't believe that there should be unlimited wealth, and that is what we see has been taking place on Wall Street. And even when there's no more money left in the kitty, they just start printing more money. And what we have is we're creating problems not only domestically, domestic problems, but we're creating problems on an international level because it has ripple effects where it affects all economies of the world. We have to realize that we are in a global economy. And when we've gotten to the point where we're just printing trillions of dollars, and when this is nothing more than just printed paper or just banknotes, there's a problem, and there's a severe risk that you have where it's going to affect nations and governments. So I agree with you on that, Darcy. Darcy, in this part segment, what I'd like to do is just get on a little, cover some of the things that's taking place again in the Middle East, especially with Israel. And just recently, I was reading some information with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where he was insinuating that he thought the U.S. wasn't taking a strong enough position to act against Iran, especially with their nuclear programs. The Prime Minister, basically, he has taken a tone where it's even more threatening toward Israel, and he wants the U.S. to side with Israel, with the possibility of even attacking that nation. Now, this is being met with strong resistance throughout the region with many of the neighbors of Israel, and even Russia and China, which we're not hearing that in the news. But what is your take on that, Darcy?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I'll be honest with you. I am worried about a Netanyahu-led October surprise, you know, where he would, bomb Iran's nuclear facilities. Could come with, 2 weeks left in the 2012 presidential campaign. Now, it's no secret that Netanyahu and Romney are pretty close, and they could do this, one, to achieve what Netanyahu wants to do, but two, also to, enhance Romney's chances of, coming from behind to defeat the president. So I think that's something we have to be on the lookout for. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time we've experienced an October surprise. So,
what we see is the Republicans, and especially their candidates, they are just talking about how weak the U.S. is in regards to this threat, and they are saying that the president should launch an attack or join Israel in launching attack. I think when you have candidates that are running for the highest office in the land, advocating that we should be that hasty in regards to going to war, I think it lends itself to where people should pause and look at those candidates.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Exactly.
I would rather see candidates that are advocating peace rather than saying, let's go to war, especially without even having all the facts. We saw that in 2000. We saw that President Bush was trying to hastily take us in the direction of war, saying that we had all these weapons of mass destruction. And then we had Colin Powell, which he came before the UN, and then he made the case for the U.S., and now he is saying, well, I didn't have all the facts. Right now we have, in regards to Iran, building a nuclear facility, nuclear weapons, there are no facts at all.
Right. Nothing from the International Atomic Energy Commission substantiates, that Iran is building, building the uranium for a nuclear bomb. I mean, it's it's ridiculous that this is even being discussed, you know, by the you know, Prime Minister of Israel, and it's actually entertained seriously by you know, the Republican presidential ticket. I mean, it's scary, and it's just unfathomable.
So it appears to me like we have Israel doing this push at this time,
mm-hmm.
which it is basically giving strength to the extreme right and the right in this country, that here we have a weak president because he will not support this. Of course, we have Obama. When you look at his history, he has supported drone attacks. He has expanded the war in Afghanistan. When he went into office, he had less than 40,000. We have well over 100,000 there. Not
right.
to mention the contractors that we have in that region. We have over 200,000 contractors. He has escalated to drone attacks in Pakistan. In Somalia, he has created chaos throughout that entire region. But in regards to this campaign, we have seen the Israeli government, and we see the Republican Party here have been trying to reach out to the Republican base by calling for war. That's what I see, and you probably see the same thing.
I do.
And now people always say the best of two evils. Either whether you look at Obama, his track record, or looking at Mitt Romney and saying that we need to reach out to our supporters and get them to support us into going into another war and conflict. There I see that scenario where people saying the best of two evils, because I believe deep within, most people would not prefer war.
Right.
Your opinion, your take on that?
I agree. I think it's a great analysis. I agree with everything you said there. I would go even a step further insofar as the recent controversy with the anti-Islamist film. I wonder, and there have been, you know, there's a lot of speculation in the past few days. I wouldn't be totally surprised if this wasn't some sort of Netanyahu-like coup party trick. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I didn't say that, Darcy. But you said it for me.
Okay. I also wouldn't be surprised if someone.
I wouldn't
John
be surprised
Bolton,
either.
Yeah, John Bolton, the walrus mustached, ex-ambassador to
right.
the UN, and maybe Pamela Geller, if they weren't involved. Or maybe even the Saudi monarchy. But the whole purpose. It seems, if you step back and just think about it, is to make Obama look like, you know, he's governing in a world with all this unrest, and he's essentially weak. This could all be a dirty trick.
Well, I believe you're probably right on what you're saying there, Darcy. Darcy, I also wanted to ask you, when you look at this whole scenario, what we've been talking about here, is Israel a problem for the U.S. and President Obama, which I believe, based on what you just told me, or do you really see any major problem with any problems? Because every nation has its problems. If they have leaders,
right.
they have problems. Do you really see any problems there with the program, the nuclear program that Iran has? I mean, because they've been very open with their program.
They've been very open. They've allowed the IAEA inspectors in. I believe them when they say that, you know, they're building or trying to build the nuclear reactors for energy and medical purposes. There's nothing that would indicate that they are intending to build a bomb, and Israel lives in almost a constant state of paranoia. So in some regards I can see where Netanyahu, you know, why he believes the things he does, but I don't think there's any substantive evidence to support what he believes.
And Darcy, Russia is also saying that they have also mentioned that Iran hasn't violated any of the nuclear agreements. And just recently, we had Putin. He had mentioned, President Putin had said, attacking Iran would be a disaster. Well, actually, it was one of the, I believe it was one of the foreign ministers had mentioned attacking Iran would be a disaster. We're not even hearing this in the news because Russia has taken a very hard-line position on the U.S. or any of the NATO countries attacking, or Israel attacking Iran.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not hearing this in the news. This should be on the morning news and also the evening news, but we're not hearing this.
Yeah, we hear it in bits and pieces, you know, on like RU TV and then some of the foreign press, but the U.S. media isn't really giving it really any coverage.
Darcy, I'm going to let you take a break and maybe another minute or so reintroduce yourself. Darcy, he is coming to us again today. He was with us last week. Not only is he a friend of mine, he's a writer, a journalist, historian. But, Darcy, could you take a minute and just reintroduce yourself before we move into the last portion of our program? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Stuart. As Stuart mentioned earlier, I have written a number of political history books, including currently a 5-volume series on or history of independent and third-party politics in the United States. I've also written a couple other books, including A Nation Divided, the 1968 Presidential Campaign. And I also do some blogging on a website called uncoveredpolitics.com, where I try to write about some of the underreported political stories taking place in the country. And I also write a lot of history there as well, kind of time capsules looking back at things that happened, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I've also been involved in independent and third-party politics for the better part of the last 4 decades.
Well, thank you very much, Darcy, and again, thanks for joining us on the program. We're going to touch on a few things very quickly before we conclude our program today. Darcy, I want to get to the Palestinian issue that we have going on also in that part of the world. How should the U.S. be involved in resolving this issue with Palestine, and what role should the U.S. play to protect the rights of the Palestinian people, in your opinion?
Well, I've long supported a two-state solution to the Palestinian question. So I guess what it comes down to is, in the meantime, you know, what do we do, you know, as a country? And I think that we should pretty much curtail or cut off entirely all financial and military support, you know, to Israel while they continue to occupy the Palestinian land.
And you did say all, correct?
All, yes.
Yeah,
you know, as long as they continue to occupy the Palestinian lands and maintain really what amounts to an apartheid system.
Apartheid.
Right. And that not only, you know, involves all the occupied Palestinian territories, but also in Israel itself. So I would call on the president, which he will never do, and Congress, which they will never do, to suspend all, you know, military and foreign aid, including loans and grants to Israel, until they withdraw from those territories. I'd also, and this won't be done unilaterally by the U.S., but I would like to see U.S. political support for Israel be ended vis-a-vis the Security Council resolutions pertaining to Israel. We shouldn't have that veto power. And we should urge the U.S. government to join forces with the U.N. to secure, you know, Israel's complete withdrawal to the 1967 boundaries. And
now, are you opposed to the U.N. Security Council, having a U.N. Security Council there?
I'm not opposed to the I don't like the veto power.
I mean, the powers that you have with those superpowers.
Right,
there.
I am.
Right.
I think the UN should, you know, force Israel to comply with international law.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they are in direct violation of international law.
Yes, absolutely, and they have been for decades and decades.
Right. So you do you support a two-state solution, which, you know,
right.
I am very supportive of that as well.
Well, that's interesting because you actually I'm glad to hear that, but you differ a little bit from, let's say, like Jill Stein and the Green Party. They don't
right.
favor the two-state solution, but more
I think
where
the,
they live in harmony.
I believe in the short term, I believe
mm-hmm.
That's the not talking about long term, but in the short term, I think we need to have a two-state solution. Eventually, we have many difficulties and problems that need to be worked out, which could take
right.
decades. But right
yep.
now, to protect the human rights and the civil rights of people that are entitled to be in those lands, and to make certain that they don't lose their rights and their land, I think a two-state solution is probably the first step. And of course, in the long term, we need to move toward longer term solutions where we can resolve the political difference, where the people can live there, just like in that was the situation in South Africa years ago.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Just want to move over a little bit further to the east.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of commerce, how strong are our relationships with China, and do you see a political divide regarding the Middle East, East and West, and Russia and China and the U.S. NATO forces?
I do. I don't see it as serious as the potential Russia-U.S. divide over the Middle East. It's still there's still some division there, but I don't think it's as serious as you know,
the reason why I'm asking that, because obviously we do a lot of business with China,
mm-hmm.
but when you look at Russia and China and you see what's taking place in the Middle East, you see that there's a divide there because, you know, Russia and China are saying that, you know, we need for you to halt your aggressions into this part of the world. And
mm-hmm.
the U.S. and NATO, obviously, you can see that they're encroaching into more and more territory and interfering more in those areas. So when I see a divide, that's the divide that I'm referring to.
Right, right. Okay.
And what was your take on that again? What was your take on that, Darcy?
Well, I think our relationship right now with China is pretty much an economic one. I don't look at China as a military threat against the U.S. We're at this point in our history, we're much too large a trading partner with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I see China and Russia, I guess, from two different lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see China exerting its political will in maybe the same way that, you know, Vladimir Putin would, if that makes any
mm-hmm.
sense.
Well, what about North Korea?
North Korea, they're kind of in a situation, you know, all their own, in that I do kind of think they're a bad actor on the world stage. I don't see at this point any promising hope of bringing them into the world community in the same way that say China is.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
Well, one of the things when I'm curious about when you look at North Korea, and
mm-hmm.
let's look at Iran, and we talk about the threat that Iran
mm-hmm.
has in, well, not we, I should say the U.S. government. But when
mm-hmm.
you look at a lot of our trading partners, the U.S. trading partners, I shouldn't say our trading partners, but U.S. trading partners
mm-hmm.
in that part of the world, such as China and Japan and South Korea, we're not taking the same approach toward North Korea which they already have weapons, as we are taking toward Iran. We are on the verge of ready, preparing to go to war with Iran. Part of the reason is because Iran has 109 billion barrels of oil. The ground there. And the other thing is we have Korea, which they already, they're a nuclear power. So, you know, that it's a game changer. But when and that's part of my take on it. But basically, when we look at North Korea, I don't think we're doing enough to improve our diplomatic relationships with this country. And primarily is because, you know, they have the backing of China and Russia, and the U.S. has basically looked at them as that orphan country that they can basically, they can talk tough language, but they know basically big brothers are right there. That's my take on it. But what is your take?
Yeah, similar.
Well, anyway, Darcy, what I'm going to do is I just want to touch on a couple of things, and then we're going to wrap this up. I want you to give whatever websites that you do have. Afghanistan, we're still there. We were supposed to, President Obama said we were going to be out of Afghanistan within his first 9 months in office. Is that a problem for Obama?
That we're still there?
Right.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's a failed promise. The voters, are they going to hold that against him come November?
Well, I don't think they are. I mean, there'll be a few people that won't vote for him because of the escalation and the fact that we're still there. But I don't think that's going to be a big factor in the outcome. I wish he had ended the war, a couple years ago. But it is what it is at this point. But I don't see that as costing him much politically, unfortunately.
Right. And right now, I really don't see him calling for an end to the war in that area or our involvement. Right now the president is saying that we'll be involved in that region and those countries for the next decade. So he's actually gone far beyond any notion that Americans had that he would be bringing the troops home. Darcy, again, I want to express my appreciation that you came on the program again and shared a lot of what you were talking about in your campaign and also just sharing a little bit about yourself. Darcy, do you have any web addresses or how people can contact you either through the internet or just to learn a little bit more about you and your background?
Okay, sure. Listeners can go to www.uncoveredpolitics.com there's a little biography there, plus contact information if they want to call or email me.
Good, very good. And thanks again for coming on the program. I just want to mention very briefly, next week we plan to have on as our guest, it will be Greg Payson. Greg Payson is running as a U.S. Senate candidate for New Jersey, and he is also the General Secretary for the Socialist Party USA. He'll be talking and discussing a little bit about his campaign and also what the Socialist Party USA, what they are doing nationwide. Also, we have Alex Mendoza. He'll be coming on in within the next couple of weeks, sharing a little bit about what he's doing with the Stuart Alex Mendoza campaign for 2012. Again, I want to thank everyone for joining the program today. And we look forward to having you to come back on and joining us next Monday at the same time. And thanks again. Thank you, Darcy, for joining the program. Look forward to being with you folks next week. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.